Our guest this hour says, besides the high-profile police actions that resulted in the deaths of black men in Ferguson, New York, and elsewhere in the U.S., America has failed black people in many other ways in 2014. We'll discuss some of his examples and how he says they indicate a larger system that continues to routinely devalue and denigrate black people. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, January 6th. We'll wonder if you agree or not that America has failed African Americans in many ways. And we'll also talk about the state of race relations in the U.S. today. A recent Gallup poll shows an increased number of Americans think race relations is the most important problem in the United States. Another poll says race relations have gotten worse under President Obama. How do we improve them? What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Derek Clifton, a staff writer at MIKE, covering identity, culture, and social justice issues. A news commentator, reporter, and speaker on race, gender, and LGBT issues. Derek is also a master's candidate at the Medill School of Journalism. His piece, 20 Times Other Than Ferguson, That America Failed Black People in 2014, was published in December, and we have that posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being back with us, and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Well, let's talk about your piece, which we meant to get to when we talked to you. We talked to you last month, but we didn't get to it. So we said we'd have you back, and I'm glad you were able to be back with us. You write that in 20 Times Other Than Ferguson, That America Failed Black People in 2014, that African Americans dominated news coverage last year, but not often for good reasons. What do you think was the biggest failure on your list?
Well, of course, the headline says, you know, 20 times other than Ferguson, and clearly if you ask any person who's been following the news, then witnessing many unarmed black people, you know, be killed by police, then for there not to be any indictments or charges moving forward, you know, is probably for many people the biggest failure against African Americans and people of color this year. But to be honest, I think other than that, one of the biggest, most egregious examples from the list is the case from Marissa Alexander in Florida, where she fired a warning shot against an abusive spouse and was trying to protect herself and her children, but she was not allowed any kind of self-defense claim in court and unfortunately faced a 60-year prison sentence. And in a plea bargain, she took a 3-year sentence, which still registers as a felony in her record and means that, you know, she'll have an even harder time when she gets out of prison being able to provide for her kids and get a job. And that's just one example of where our justice system can be a bit backwards. Because remember, in that same state, you know, just in 2013, you know, George Zimmerman got away with killing Trayvon Martin in a vigilante hunting effort. So, you know, I think what this reveals is that in a lot of ways our justice system has its priorities mixed up, and what people want simply is for black lives to be valued even more than they already are.
Yeah, you did write that these deaths of African Americans did not happen in a vacuum. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is that what belies a lot of the logic that you see when people say differently between black and white people that race relations in America are either, you know, good or bad. You know, if you're a black person in America, you are conditioned, you know, based on what you see in the media, how you see police treat you, how you experience your race. You understand that in a lot of ways that you are beholden to a lot of different stereotypes and unfortunate double standards and expectations that are held against you in the mainstream. So unfortunately, there are just certain things that black people have to deal with that their white peers don't. What happens is when we witness that, it gives us a bit of a double consciousness because we're aware not only of how we feel and think about issues, but But a lot of black people also are aware of what white people are going to think or say. For example, one of the other items on the list was that a school served fried chicken and watermelon meal during Black History Month. Now, for the most part, you know, white peers don't have to worry as much about foods being stereotyped as white foods. But for example, fried chicken and watermelon are two of the biggest foods that are used as stereotypes against black people and have been for decades, especially in the age of menstrual shows. And while we're far removed from that, in many ways, those unfortunately racist roots still come back to haunt us in many ways today, even in 2014 and now 2015. So that's what I mean when I say these incidents will happen in a vacuum, because there's a lot of implicit bias out there, because it's not only black people who are affected by these images and by these tropes in the media, our white peers and other non-black people of color are as well.
Yeah, another example from your list, people dressed as Ray and Janae Rice for Halloween in blackface.
Yeah, and in that example, you have a double dose of, you know, unfortunate racism, because blackface, you know, as I mentioned before, the menstrual shows, blackface does have an unfortunate history in Hollywood, where instead of black actors being hired to play parts that, you know, allowed us to have honest portrayals of ourselves, we weren't allowed that same grace or dignity. Instead, you have white actors lampooning us and lampooning our skin color in the process and in very racist ways. Even addition to the blackface, you would often have people exaggerating the size of their lips with red lip color to make fun of, you know, some African Americans having bigger lips. But when we're talking about the Ray Rice, Janae Rice incident and how people decide to dress Halloween, you even had one person who dresses Ray Rice in blackface carry around a black blow-up doll and dragged it on the floor, which also is very highly indicative of, you know, some sexist and misogynist attitude toward women. Because remember, this is a woman who was beaten in an elevator. And I don't think domestic violence is funny in any light.
Yeah. NBA team executives profited from black players but hated black fans. Remind us of that story.
So we had two major instances in 2014. Probably the biggest is former L.A. Clippers owner Donald Sterling telling his girlfriend V. Siviano in a recorded tape that he was offended by the fact that she hung around black people and didn't want her to bring any of them to her games. Meanwhile, you look at the players on the team and you look at who comes to games and you see quite a few African-American fans. So it begs the question, is okay, you know, there are a lot of African-Americans who happen to be professional NBA players, and quite a few are NBA fans, just as other people are, but when we're not respected and we're not seen as being worthy of being in the same company as our white and other non-black people of color peers, you know, that hurts and it stings. And I think the backlash that he got from not only the black community, but also from other leaders and other team owners in the NBA is indicative of the fact that there needs to be a cultural shift. But, you know, Sterling wasn't the only one, because Atlanta Hawks owner Bruce Levinson, his emails were leaked, in which he had a memo to staff complaining that they were having trouble attracting season ticket holders because the environment at the games was too quote-unquote black. So he wanted to see more white people at the games and thought that they needed to make certain changes to the culture they built around the team in order to make that happen. So it's a slap in the face to your black fans and a slap in the face to the black players who are helping to drive the foot traffic and, you know, the people who are coming to see these games in the first place. And it just shows, you know, in just, you know, really ridiculous ways how people's, you know, stereotypes and their racial biases end up affecting the actual lived realities, not only of sports fans, but just of everyday people.
Yeah. We have just a little more than a minute before we take a news break, and we'll get to more of your examples as we go along and talk about some of these other issues. But talk a little bit about why you say that, you know, these are examples of a larger system that routinely degrades black people.
So what I mean by that is that when you constantly hear the message that you do not deserve to be in the presence of white peers, that your skin, your hair are things to be made fun of, that certain foods are attached to you in really, you know, insidiously racist ways that, you know, stereotype and that make you feel like you're less of a human being. It just sends a message that, you know, black people and the lives they live and their cultural contribution to America are just not seen as on par with their peers. And I think anybody can empathize with the fact that that's quite hurtful, but in beyond it being an interpersonal issue, it also has a broader implication in terms of the society in which we live, because it ends up affecting how people view black people, and it impacts how they treat
us. Yeah, we need to check news, Derek. We'll be back after news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Derek Clifton, who is a staff writer at Mike, about his piece, 20 Times Other Than Ferguson That America Failed Black People in 2014. We're talking about the examples that Derek says indicate a larger system that continues to routinely devalue and denigrate black people. But we are also going to talk about his hope that this could result in action that will transform race relations in America's racial landscape. And we're welcoming any questions you might have or any reactions that you might have. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Do you agree that America has failed African Americans in 2014? If so, how? If no, why not? What do you think needs to be done to make change in this area this year? Let us know what you think. You know, we have a number of people on Facebook, Derek, who are making comments suggesting that this conversation or that your examples are encouraging racism itself. For example, Matthew on Facebook says, "Why do you continue to stoke the racism flames when Ferguson was clearly a bad dude assaulting a law enforcement officer? Let it go, man." What's your reaction to that?
You know, I think it's a bit problematic when we're trying to talk about race and racism, and by virtue of just bringing up, you know, the conversation, automatically somehow a person, regardless of who they are, is racist. But in particular, when African Americans speak about it, they're often encouraged just to be quiet, just to shush. And I don't think that's the way you get progress on issues such as race relations. It hasn't been, you know, that way for years, unfortunately. And it takes, unfortunately, protests. It takes people, you know, making massive disruptions. It takes policy changes. It takes the conversation in order for things to move forward. And I don't think we can reduce what happened in Ferguson to one supposedly, you know, bad kid, as this person says, and say that person deserved to die. And I think that's why you have a lot of people who are really rallying behind the phrase Black Lives Matter and have really made that a movement, because, you know, as studies have shown and as these examples have shown, unfortunately, the way that law enforcement officers treat African Americans compared to their white peers for similar crimes is just disproportionately negative, and that needs to change.
Yeah, and you might have to repeat yourself a little bit, but we often see the slogan from those who, you know, object to the protests that are going on. When they see a sign that says Black Lives Matter, they'll state all lives matter.
Yes, and I think what some people, you know, some people when they use all lives matter, they have good intentions. Some of them do, because they want to affirm that all lives, you know, are indeed valuable and should be valuable. And I think no one would disagree with that sentiment. However, the reason why we've arrived at this current point in the conversation is because it is very clear that, unfortunately, law enforcement doesn't quite see it that way, because you keep getting every 28 hours, a black person is killed by police in America. And then with these incidents that we keep seeing in the news, unarmed black people continue, for whatever reason, to be killed and just brutalized by the police. And I don't think you can sit and witness that and say that all lives matter equally in reality, when clearly there's a crisis for black lives in America.
Gary on Facebook says, America failed black people? What on earth do you think the Civil War was all about?
You know, I think that's a really offhand comparison, to be honest. The Civil War, in a lot of ways, is just completely different. Where we are right now in the conversation is just getting to a place where we can, not only talk about race, but we can also make some true institutional and social change on the issue, just have some really honest conversations about it. I think that's why people are frustrated that the, heightened consciousness about racial issues is going on right now. But I think it's necessary because the conversation has been put off for quite too long. And honestly, we're not done yet. As much as we like to, assume that we live in a quote-unquote post-racial America, clearly what's gone on the last few months and even beyond that shows otherwise.
Well, there was a poll conducted for Bloomberg Politics in early December that showed 53% of respondents feel race relations have gotten worse under President Obama's leadership. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I don't necessarily think this can be attributed to Obama's leadership per se, but more so to the fact that, a lot of people, when things go wrong in America, it's easy to say it's the president's fault. When we have, systems of government, not only at the federal level, also at the, at the state and at the local level. And unfortunately, a lot of change used to happen on a lot of the lower levels of government, from, the local police to the local, assemblies and, state houses and what our governors are doing in each of our states. And what I think people really want to try to get at when they say it's Obama's fault, they're looking for a place to stake the blame when what a lot of people need to be doing instead is focusing on how they can help drive the conversation forward in their own communities. But a lot of the reason why, unfortunately, the conversation about race is, higher on the barometer right now is because of what we saw here in New York and Staten Island with Eric Garner, and also what happened in Ferguson, but also the steady drumbeat of unarmed black people and unarmed brown people being killed by the police.
In late December, a Gallup poll showed 13% of Americans say race relations is the most important problem in the United States, its highest since finding a 15% in 1992 in midst of the Rodney King verdict. Are you? What do you think that poll finding suggests?
I think that poll finding suggests, honestly, that, as much as people are frustrated with the protesters, saying that they will shut it down until they get justice, I think it shows that they're in many ways succeeding in keeping the conversation alive because, let's be honest, the way the media works, once an issue gets its, 15 seconds, oftentimes it'll fly off the radar unless it's so big that it just cannot be ignored, and it may go on for a few more days, but the weekend comes, a holiday comes, whatever other big news story comes and it all of a sudden knocks it out of the agenda. But what the protesters have been able to do is keep the conversation alive, whether it's through doing die-ins in malls, whether it's organizing multi-city marches, and which there are more coming from what I've been able to see. But I think that that's what it shows. The conversation is continuing, and people are now noticing, not only because the protesters have also given the examples they've seen, both in Ferguson and in Staten Island and others, that these aren't isolated incidents. This is indicative of a larger system indeed, and not just in one area, but in many areas of the country. And it really forces us to really come to grips with, an unfortunate racial reality in America.
We're talking with Derek Clifton, who is a staff writer at MIKE, talking about his piece that he wrote last month on 20 times other than Ferguson that America failed black people in 2014. But we're also going to talk about how to change the conversation about race and racism in 2015 and how or if the situation will improve in 2015. And we're welcoming your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our lines are full now, so let's take some calls. Victor in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Victor.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Derek.
Morning.
Good morning.
Derek, there's another angle I would like to approach this from. You know, it's understood that there is blatant racism in the United States. I would agree with that. I won't agree that it's President Obama's fault. If anything, he's a great social barometer to show the real truth of racism in society. We don't want to talk about the fact that there has been a phenomenal increase in recruitment of white supremacists, militia, skinheads, you name it, ever since he became president, because there's a lot of people who can't accept the fact that we have a black man as a president. My angle is, how do you attribute some of this to what's going on in the black community? You say America has failed us, but how much of that is our fault? You know, we often react to problems. When is it going to come a time when we get proactive and start solving our own problems instead of blaming white people in America? It sounds conservative, but that's the reality. We have a wealth of talent in the black community that can solve all our problems. But we have to start looking at it from a proactive angle. If we don't, we're going to continue to have Fergusons and other situations in this society.
Mm-hmm. Derek?
Well, I think a lot of African Americans have been in their community for years trying to, you know, enact some change in terms of how community policing happens and what the protesters are, you know, trying to do is, you know, we have a lot of young black leaders who are taking up the mantle, who are keeping the conversation alive, who are, you know, now, you know, it did unfortunately take, you know, a tragic instance for this to happen, but the important part is that it spawned a movement and that they are, you know, going out and making their demands known. But I think, unfortunately, it gets a little tempting when things like this happen to say, no, this is only a black community issue. No, this is something that only black people have to deal with. And unfortunately, given the climate that we exist in, you know, as African Americans in this country, you know, we didn't create racism. You know, racism is not our fault. You know, we were brought here, you know, largely, you know, a lot of people in this country, you know, are our ancestors are slaves. And you have to be, you know, real about that the system of race was not created by us. We've been beholden to it, you know, for centuries in this country, and it's not going to change overnight. So when people try to talk about racism, they're not necessarily saying, oh, blame white people blanketly, you know, but what we're saying is there's a system which values, you know, certain lives above others. And that's why you have people rallying behind the Black Lives Matter movement, because they want to see this get to a place where we can, you know, all be on the same footing. We can all be at the same place.
Yeah.
Or at least have the opportunities.
Another caller says that the black community should take black-on-black crime as seriously as it does police shootings of black people. What do you make of that comparison?
That's another tending comparison to make, though. When you look at statistics, most killings happen within racial groups as opposed to between racial groups. So I think according to one statistic, 87% of white people who are murdered by other white people. So when people say it's a black-on-black crime issue, then they also need to focus on white-on-white crime. I think, you know, unfortunately, crime is and murder is something that no one wants to deal with, and it's tragic. You know, no one wants to lose lives. These impact families, these impact communities, and in some ways, it impacts how, you know, communities are policed. And I think, again, that's what the conversation is about. It's looking at not only our policing system, but also our justice system and the prison industrial complex, and really questioning the ways in which, you know, people are treated differently based on their skin color, based on their background.
Let's go to Michael in Lake Mills now. Hello, Michael.
Yes, good morning. As a 30-year retired veteran police officer in Milwaukee, it sickens me to listen to conversations like this. Even my children are becoming to the point where they turn on the news and say, why is every issue, regardless of the foundation of the issue, now black and white? And, of course, they call me on the phone and say, Dad, how do you feel all about this? See, you know, your guest says nothing about the fact that 2 years before I retired, there was 3 shootings involving black officers with black men. Guess how much press that got? And 2 of those officers were disciplined and terminated because those shootings were not justifiable by the standards by which police officers are judged. But guess what? Not one thing was ever said about those shootings. Not one page of print ever was put. Nothing was ever written about it. I'm privy to the information as well as other officers on our department because we work with these people. Nothing was ever printed about it. And you know why? Because it was a black officer who shot a black person.
Yeah. Why don't we hear about that? And what is there a difference, Derek?
I think there are a lot of factors in these examples. You know, one is the fact that, you know, as you mentioned, yes, these are examples of officers who did kill people. They weren't found justifiable, and they were black officers against black, you know, black people in their communities. In those instances, there was justice. You know, there was accountability. And the examples that we're seeing now, there is lack of accountability. And it also happens to be the case that you have white officers in, you know, policing black communities who aren't being held accountable, especially in a place like Ferguson, where the police force, in terms of its racial makeup, doesn't mirror the people in the community. And I think that when you have that, you know, racial divide, not only in the makeup of police forces and versus the community, but also just in terms of leadership in general, it forces a lot of people to question how race factors into it. But when there's lack of accountability, it's concerning. And I think that's the outraging element that, you know, gets it the coverage that it does get.
Michael? I guess Michael must have hung up. Before our next news break, let's talk a little bit. You did, in the piece, mention that, you know, while there are a lot of examples of a larger system that routinely devalues and denigrates black people, that you are hopeful that these moments could result in a transformation. How so?
And I think it's important when we're talking about the moments when things didn't go so well to also focus on what can be done, how can things move forward, and I think, you know, as you mentioned earlier, the Gallup poll showing that, you know, more Americans now than in the past few decades are, you know, aware of racial issues. I think what it really forces us to do is just to really have, you know, the honest conversations, not only at the interpersonal level, but also in our communities, and also forces our leaders, you know, at local, state, and federal levels to really question the ways in which race still affects not only our interactions with one another, but also what impacts our policies even more importantly. And there are quite a few ways in which the momentum from a lot of the news coverage and the conversation on race can be carried into creating policy and creating, you know, just different, you know, new community structures, ways of policing that affirm lives equally. I think that's the hope I have.
We will talk about some of those possible policy changes that would improve the situation, race relations in 2015. We are talking with Derek Clifton, a staff writer at Mike, who is the author of the piece 20 Times Other Than Ferguson That America Failed Black People in 2014. We'll continue talking with him after we check the latest news from WPR and NPR. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org if you'd like to join the conversation. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about changing the conversation about race and racism in 2015. We are talking about changing the policies that that address inequalities in our criminal justice system and in our society in general. And we are welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest, Derek Clifton, who is a staff writer at MIKE. We're talking with him about these issues in part because of his piece, 20 Times Other Than Ferguson, That America Failed Black People in 2014. We have posted that on the Joy Curdine Show Facebook page. And we have other callers, so let's go to Todd in Milwaukee. Hello, Todd.
Hello. I just wanted to point out that I'm glad you have this program in the morning like this, and I'm glad that, you have callers calling in, because you have a guest that's making a point, and then the callers that are calling in are making comments that are racist, that are just proving his point. And I'll give you the one caller that called in and said something about the Civil War, you know, about that being, you know, after the Civil War, that somehow, at the bare minimum, somebody not being a slave, they should be quiet now because, you know, now that they're not a slave, what are they squawking about now? Is basically what that comment was about. And I'm thinking, you think about all the progress and all the struggle and all the things that black people had to go through since the Civil War, and the bare minimum out of the Civil War is just to not be a slave, and then to have a caller call in and make a comment about, well, what are they making all this noise about? Just proves that, and I'm guaranteeing that person that called in. Or not, it wasn't a call, it was an email. The person that emailed that comment in was probably white, and they don't get it. And that, to me, is just an example of a racist attitude towards, you know, when there's another text that came in, someone said, for your program was, what, you know, these kinds of things just promote more racism. And it's like, I'm sick of hearing white people saying, oh, black people are getting all riled up now, like there's some kind of animals they're just trying to make noise. This is a race of people that are fighting. I don't want to go. I could go on.
I know you. And Todd, where should we go from here?
Where should we go?
Yeah, well, should we do now?
What you're doing right now, when people are uncomfortable and they're calling in and they're angry about it, that's a good thing, because that's what needs to be being done. And whether you agree with things that are going on or disagree, if that's how you're going to overconquer racism and build those relationships, by being transparent, genuine, and having those conversations that people like to have privately but don't want to have in front of other races, and by sharing the floor on that and working through those things, instead of just saying we don't have a race problem and we need to just, everybody needs to be quiet and be conservative and go with the flow. We need to speak up and respect. Hey, you know what? You might not agree with what's going on in Ferguson or the situation. You might not agree with the politics behind it. You may not agree with the police part about it. But at the end of the day, there's a reason why so much noise is being made about it. There is an underlying tone. It's no different than if you're fighting with your spouse. It's never really about the small issue. It's about the deeper underlying issues and obviously there is a serious problem going on. That's why there's all this protest going on.
Thank you very much, Todd. Well, Derek, what do you say?
You know, I have to unfortunately agree. I'm sure you could probably hear the hesitation in my voice, and, you know, especially getting the question about the Civil War. And that's why I had to, you know, honestly, as an act of self-preservation, say, you know what, I'm going to be polite and I'm going to have to dismiss that as, you know, a different example. And I think, you know, I think often when you have direct conversation about racial issues going on right here in front of us, people will derail it in any way they can. And that's what we saw there. And I think that's what the caller just, you know, really astutely pointed out. It's a derailing tactic, saying, oh, the Civil War, or oh, black, or why not focus on what happens between two black people? Or, oh, you know, why are you making this about race? You're racist for talking about race. No, we have to move forward by facing, you know, the racism that we see and talking about these racial issues. That's the only way we're going to get anywhere. We have to have a conversation.
Let's go to Richard in Milwaukee next. Hello, Richard.
Well, hello. How are you today?
Good. What do you want to say?
Well, I could talk many things, but I think we need some calmness here. We have to recognize that life always presents us with problems. We need to have debate, discussion. They set this government up that way. Some did. Some don't really like that, but then we have to go beyond the beat. We need to get action going. I mean, bridges don't get built just by thinking about
them. Yeah. Thank you, Richard. So talk is good, but we need action, Richard says, Derek. Well, there's some action happening, right?
There is action happening, and I think what you're seeing from the broader movement and what that's prompting, you know, at a lot of, you know, state, local, and federal levels, people to start talking about community policing and also how race impacts policy, I think you are seeing a lot of action being made, and the protesters who are out there on the ground, you know, when they speak to the media, when they are on the ground making those protests, they are also making demands for specific changes they want to see. They're making that very clear to a lot of leaders, even if the leaders aren't immediately acting on those specific action items. But I will also say that, you know, for quite a few people who don't have to think about racial issues on a day-to-day basis, you know, a talk is important because it's important to understand the different ways that our own individual life experiences, and I'm talking from an interpersonal standpoint here, not so much from systemic, you know, and the institutional, but just in terms of how we each deal with race in general. If we do not take the time to just seriously examine how we were raised, the environments which we grew up in, the things that were said around us, what we saw on television, how we saw our peers treated, and not acknowledge that there is a disparity racially in this country, we can't get anywhere in terms of moving to the next step. So for a lot of people, for a lot of individuals, it takes having the conversation. Even when we see politicians get to make really ignorant statements about race, it is very clear that they need a conversation in order to move the ball forward.
Well, do you think that, I don't know, white people need to understand more about what it's like to be African-American right now? Is more understanding the answer there, or what?
I think that's part of it. And it's a large part of it because, honestly, we can't get anywhere if we don't understand each other. And that's part of why you have a lot of people who have rallied behind the protesters who, you know, are out there regardless of their racial background. I did see one of the protests firsthand, and there were quite a few people from all race, you know, ethnic, sexual orientation, gender identities out there that were screaming Black Lives Matter, that were talking about the different instances where unarmed people, you know, people of color were killed by police, especially Black people. And I think once you get to a position where you can honestly, you know, look at your own reality and look at that of somebody else, say, hey, you know, Black people have some unique challenges that they face in America, and it is up to all of us to figure out how we can create an environment. Not only, it can't just be on Black people, like it has to be a community-driven action. It takes conversation, but it also takes moving from that conversation to get to the next step, and that's what a lot of the protesters are trying to organize around and really help us to do.
You know, last week, Oprah upset some protesters and supporters of the movement when she was interviewed about her film Selma, the film that she produced, and she said that it's wonderful to see people marching and protesting, but she's looking for leadership to come out of it. Was there anything wrong with that?
Yeah, you know, and a lot of people admire Oprah because they see her as, you know, a beacon for, you know, what the possibilities for African Americans. And she's often mentioned an example saying when people are like, oh, hey, you know, why are Black people complaining? Do you have Oprah? She's one of the richest women in the world. It's like, sure, that's Oprah. She's one person. And I think with her opinion, yes, she's one person. She's one voice on the matter. But unfortunately, her comment does not accurately reflect the efforts on the ground because you do have quite a few leaders who are present, who are emerging, who are taking action, who are making demands, who are sitting on commissions, who are having direct conversations with lawmakers, who are interacting with the police, who are organizing these protests. You have leadership. It takes, you know, I think for somebody at her position of wealth and access, who knows a lot of people who have their hands on the levers of power, I think the conversation needs to be happening in what some of the people who are organizers did respond with on Twitter, and those articles are out there. You can see the reaction. They're saying, hey, Oprah. Some people saying, hey, maybe you need to actually talk to the protests, engage what they're doing, engage with these organizers, see how you can help be part of the solution instead of sitting from an armchair and talking about what they are or not doing, giving your position in the Black community.
Yeah. Well, what policy changes do you think we'll see in 2015 when it comes to these issues?
I think that remains to be seen, and we're still in January, and you know there are protests coming up from what I've been able to see and observe, and I think that hopefully, you know, what will happen as a result of a lot of the organizing efforts and from the broader conversation that is being generated on racial issues in America, especially as they pertain to Black people, you know, hopefully you have, you know, more local laws and even more federal laws that sanction how police treat people in interactions, and also that clamps down on racial profiling and police brutality. I think that's a large step, but of course it's not the only step, because there are a lot of different, you know, institutional issues that really impact Black people in ways that, you know, it's going to take more than just 1 year for us to get past. But we have to start somewhere, and I think that given the issues that we've seen crop up in the media recently, I think a lot of people have an idea of where at least to start.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Derek Clifton, staff writer at Mike, covering identity, culture, social justice, a news commentator, reporter, and speaker on race, gender, and LGBT issues. Thanks to Brianne Shasso and to Christy Taylor for producing this program. This is the Ideas Network.